Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Many countries have started relaxing rules and scaling back testing. Researchers are divided over whether this return to normality is too fast, too soon. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Chris Stokel-Walker, writer. This article is published under the heading, COVID restrictions are lifting. What scientists think? Here is the story. Countries worldwide are starting to lift restrictions that were first imposed in 2020 to slow the spread of COVID-19, including rules that govern travel, socializing, mask wearing, and self-isolation. The changes are prompting mixed reactions from scientists. Bolstered by dropping infection rates and studies suggesting that COVID-19 caused by the Omicron variant of SARS-CoV-2 is less severe, politicians in places where that variant is dominant are relaxing rules that were introduced to tackle the pandemic. In the UK, for example, all legal restrictions related to COVID-19, including required masking in public and self-isolation following a positive test, are being scrapped. Other nations, including Poland, Slovakia, and Iceland, have removed the requirement to wear masks outdoors in public and relaxed rules on gatherings, including reopening restaurants and lifting capacity limits. Some researchers think things have been too quick to open up. In Switzerland, people no longer need to wear masks in most public places. And although those who test positive for COVID-19 must isolate for 5 days, all other restrictions have disappeared. Lifting the masks was premature, and I don't really understand why it was done, says Isabella Eckerl, co-head of the Geneva Center for Emerging Viral Diseases in Switzerland. She adds that polymerase chain reaction testing is retaining positivity rates of more than 35% in the country, and only 7 in 10 people have at least one dose of a vaccine. The same proportion of UK adults have had 3 doses. Several countries that have dropped restrictions have been subsequent increases, not only in cases, but also in hospitalizations and deaths, although the link between cases and severe outcomes has decoupled, says DP Gerdasani, an epidemiologist at Queen Mary University of London. Although some deaths following a positive test are incidental, there is a very large proportion that are deaths due to COVID-19, she says. It's a very concerning situation, and that's not even talking about the impact of long COVID. Deepti Gurdasani, epidemiologist at Queen Mary University of London, would like to see the implementation of measures that can help to minimize the impact of relaxing restrictions on case and death numbers. For example, she says, if mask wearing is optional, there should be more focus on adequately ventilating buildings. But others think that higher rates of immunity from recovery and vaccination in some places mean that many of the interventions designed to stymie the spread of COVID-19 are now moot. We are in a different place now, says Mog Sevik, who researches infectious diseases and medical virology at the University of St. Andrews. It's clear now we can't prevent infection, so the focus needs to be on preventing severe outcomes. She's optimistic that people won't start going crazy as soon as the rules on masks and socializing are relaxed. Instead, there will be a gradual shift back to normality. Joel Mosong, an infectious disease epidemiologist at Luxembourg's Health Directorate, supports lifting restrictions in his country. He says, we have seen some deaths, but nothing of the sort that we witnessed last winter, even last spring. The argument for keeping up the restrictions has really gone, and I think we are now in a phase where the strategy to remove restrictions is the right way to go. Alongside lifting restrictions, some governments are significantly scaling back their COVID-19 testing capabilities. Some researchers think this is a step too far at this stage of the pandemic. A reduction in routine testing will make it harder to identify flare-ups in infectiousness and to detect variants, says Eckrell. I will be a bit like finding the needle in the haystack, she warns. Fewer restrictions and increased mingling among members of a population who have largely been separated could cause the SARS-CoV-2 virus to mutate, and testing could act as an early warning system should a variant of concern arise. Gurdasani thinks it is a mistake to remove contact tracing and testing, which the UK government plans to significantly scale back, including ending free testing for most people. Testing is vital, she says, so we can live as freely as possible. But not everyone is convinced of the need to keep larger-scale testing going. Sevik thinks the system should be more targeted. She says the benefits of general testing for asymptomatic people aren't commensurate with costs in terms of disruption to people's lives, but she thinks regular testing should remain in high-risk settings such as hospitals, care homes, and prisons. I think you have to have a good rationale for keeping up surveillance, says Mosong. More mutations will undoubtedly arise in the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and it will be important for governments to keep track of them. But that needn't involve recording every single individual case. What is important is not actually the testing, but what happens afterwards, he says.
Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
Light of Allah, you are our true guide.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
We're waiting for you to be by your side.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. I'm your host, Zainab. The listeners, we have been discussing about the duties of waiters of Imam Mahdi, ajallaha ta'ala faraja, in which we categorized some of the most important duties And we were with Dr. Ali Alawi, who categorized the duties as the first one was marifat of imam, or the knowledge of imam, and then knowing the status of imam, then relying on the rope of wilaya or guardianship, then waiting for reappearance, and then we discussed social reform or self-reform, in which we were discussing about media readiness and military readiness. Dr. Alawi, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome. Thank you for once again accepting the invitation.
Thanks for inviting me to this show. It's a great pleasure for me to be here.
Same here. It's a pleasure to be with you, sir. So we would want you to give a gist of this self-reform and social reform for the listeners.
Yeah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. We have actually listed a series of duties for a duty bound who is waiting for the arrival and advent of Imam Ali Salam, Imam Mahdi. And we reached to some of the duties starting from self-reform and social reform. Self-reform actually shows itself because we are reviewing what we have talked about. So I try to make it short, inshallah, so that we go and continue to the other duties. So self-reform actually can be made and can be achieved by self-purification and self-building, what is known as ma'rifat al-nafs, and a person works on himself. Because, you know, ma'rifat al-nafs, knowing oneself, is an introduction to knowing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When you know, I mean, when we have actually corrected our relation with ourselves, with people around us, and then with the creator. So all of the expectations from duty bound or from a creature actually is going to be known by himself.
As noble Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam puts it rightly, the one who knows himself.
Yeah. Man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabba. Then it goes to a higher level, let's say a wider scale, that is the social. A person, a duty bound, a waiter of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, needs to be a reformist in the level of society. Reform in the level of society, even it has been defined in the words of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and infallible imams. How is it going to be achieved? It can be achieved through amrun bil ma'ruf wa nahyan 'anil munkar, that is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. It's very beautiful that they have told us everything. That is, if you want to actually be efficient in the society, you have to do this. If you want to do to work on yourself, you have to do this.
I mean,
so all our duties have already been
actually for us.
Yeah, exactly, and prescribed. So we need to tell everyone in the society to inform and to enlighten those who are in need of being enlightened and those who are need to be informed that what is the reality, in case there is a doubt or misconception. We need to work on those misconceptions. One might say that, okay, this is the duty of the scholars and, I don't know, the students of Islamic studies.
Or the Hawza students.
What's going to do with me? No, everyone is actually bound to
obligatory on a believer.
Everyone, to the scale, to the level that he is actually efficient.
Right.
Say that, for example, I have a page in one of the social media and some people can reach my points and my words. So it's my duty to say my words there.
Sprite
say that I have a good pen and I can't write articles and essays and to, for example, focus on one of the issues regarding the Islamic Ummah and enlighten others towards that, to prepare people for that.
Especially in today's world, there's so much need of so many things.
Definitely. At least to the level that you have understood, to the level that you have actually satisfied yourself, you need to actually make clarification on others. What the leader of the Islamic Ummah recently actually emphasized on and actually repeated it for some times, it is entitled as Jihad al-Tabyin. That is a jihad for clarification of what the realities are, because you know the power of media, the power of enemy is that they are going to misguide people.
Yeah.
And they are going to turn the realities into
something
which is not exist. Inshallah, I'll go towards the next point, which is a little bit to the next duty of a waiter, which is to somehow close to that.
True.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop the
But here in this self-reform and social reform, you mentioned a very, very beautiful point that first comes the self-reform and then comes the social reform, because we have people around in the society who like to go for social reform, but they don't want to go for self-reform. But here we got to know that self-reform comes first.
Yeah.
And then we have to go
if
for
we have not started with ourselves, how can we be effective in the society then?
But everyone loves to teach others, but they do not
have to start teaching ourselves.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Holy Quran that do not say to others what you do not implement or practice yourself.
Very true.
Yeah, please
very
go
true.
On.
Yeah, again, on the same concept of, let's say, Amr bin Ma'ruf wa Nahyun anil Munkar, which is a symbol, or let's say a practical way to start with social reform, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Quran, كنتم خير أمة أخرجت للناس تأمرون بالمعروف وتنهون عن المنكر وتؤمنون بالله. You have been the best of Ummah nations that have been created and that have been made for the benefit of the human beings. Why? Because you are performing in our Islamic teachings and instructions.
Sure.
We have this concept of Amr bin Ma'ruf. Because you have this, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil.
Ew.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that the followers of the Islamic teachings and divine teachings of Islam are the ones who are the best of the nations. Why? Because they have this in their duties and Islamic laws. And then, moreover, we have some hadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, where he says that إِنَّ الْأَمْرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفَ النَّهِي عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ سَبِيلُ الْأَنْبِيَاءِ. This is the way of the prophets. That is, Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahyun al Munkar is the way of the prophets. Wa minhaj al-Sulaha, and also the way of Salihin, the righteous. It's a great duty by which other duties are performed and the roads are secured. Imam says that this makes the roads, I mean, the security comes to the people. When people are finding their roles in the society as a person who is going to be affected to the level that he can and he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Then security comes to the society, because every single entity in the society is going to perform and do his action
exactly.
in the right manner. And then the incomes will be halal, will be lawful. And the injustice will be bring back and will be returned to the people whose right was there.
True.
And the earth will be revived. This is what Imam says. These are the outcomes of the Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar.
True. Otherwise, we have also this verse in Holy Quran which says that Allah swears by time and says that without any doubt a human being is in loss.
Mm-hmm.
But he gives a condition, but watawasaw bil haqq. The moment the people invite people towards haqq, towards truth, that means you are not in loss.
Very true. So we need to do our action, do our duty in the first, from as we said earlier, from ourselves. We have to start from ourselves. Then if we have been actually bound to do some actions and duties which have been taught to us and which we have received, then we can do it in a social level.
Same verses. First say, إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. So first you have to bring, you know, iman, you have to be a believer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the verse comes like, you know, وَتَوَاصَوْا بِالْحَقِّ.
وَتَوَاصَوْا بِالْحَقِّ.
Yeah.
Thank you. These are the duties that a person needs to have in a society. I said that no one should say that, okay, I'm illiterate, I have nothing to say, but the ilm, the concept of knowledge, the concept of ma'rifah, which we are talking about, is not necessarily coming through, let's say, classic, and let's say, it does not necessarily come through a classic teachings or schooling.
Yeah.
So rather than it comes, as, it's in sort of enlightenment. When
true,
you know
true.
Who is right, who is wrong, then at least this is the least amount of your understanding that you know who is right in
you
this
can
society.
Differentiate between
then
the two.
Then you need to advise others that this is the right and this is the wrong.
True.
And if you see that even a person who is educated is in the wrong way, you need to tell him the way that you are going is wrong due to these reasons. And you can make an argument.
Yeah.
So when we are saying that this is the duty of all the people of a society, it's not
all
an exaggeration. It's a reality.
If
everyone can understand some issues and some points, then based on those points that he understood, he's a duty bound.
True. So one of the important duties that we discussed is the duty of inviting people towards truth and forbidding them from evil.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that this way comes the social reform.
Yeah.
And before social reform, we said that self-purification
very
or
true.
Self-reform is extremely important.
Very true.
Hold me by your hand and please show me the way to be one of the pure and chosen companions, so that I can swear the oath of allegiance. I'll give everything that I love in God's name to avenge the blood of your grandfather Hussein. Every step of the way my dream will come true. On my last breath, oh Master, I'll call out to you.
Oh light of Allah, you are my true guide. I'm waiting for you to die by your side.
Another hadith is from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, again with the same concept, with the same theme, that Imam says that from among the duties of our Shias at the time of occultation, that is, the rich of you should help the poor of you. So look the, how Imam actually tackles the issue. The richest of you should help the poorest of yours and the needy. They have to be kind towards them.
Yeah.
And look, this is the part that I want to focus. The Imam says these are the duties of a duty point at the time of occultation. Who is going to be waiting for the arrival of Imam? So a rich should help the poor. And they, again, he has to be kind to them while he's going to help them. So it's not a sort of, let's say, actions that, okay, this is a duty, I have to perform it, so I don't care if you are happy or not. So this is what I have to pay for the sake of God. No, you have to be kind then. Then the next point, the Imam says that everyone here needs to advise his brother in faith, his sister in faith, an advice which is beneficial for him or her.
Again,
the concept of Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahy anil Munkar, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil.
Yeah.
Advise him, the advice which benefits him. Which it shows him the way in his life.
Yeah.
So Imam does not say, first, it is for a person who already worked on himself, then he has done his own self-purification to the extent that is eligible to go for the next person. Then starts doing the nasiha and also advice to the others. So again, we see Imam Baqir alayhi salam, almost a century before Imam comes to this world, Imam says the duties of a person who is waiting for the arrival of Imam at the end of the time.
So how knowledgeable are Imams have been, and how helpful for us, actually.
Definitely. Collecting all these hadith and the verse of Quran that I refer to, that is concerning the Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahy anil Munkar, we as a Muslim, we as a duty man, we as a person who is waiting for the arrival of Imam, we need to first work on ourselves to see what are the harams and halals, what are the lawful and unlawfuls that are compulsory on us, and we have to actually act upon them. Then, when we understood our duties in the society, then if we see any wrongness, any, let's say, any mistake from anybody in the society, we need to go to him or her and advise and say that this is not the way that you're going.
You don't have to be a silent watcher.
Exactly. Very true. For example, you're walking in the street and you see a person pressing another person. At least the least thing that you can say, okay, brother, this action of you is not right.
True.
So you may say that, okay, it's not effective. It does not change anything. But if you do this and another person comes and continue that, again, a third person comes and say that, definitely it will affect.
It will
show its effects in
At
the behavior of the person.
At least you perform your own duty. Dr. Alavi, thank you so much for being with us. We'll continue the topic in another session, inshallah. Thank you for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Where is the rising sun?
The Limelight.
The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is titled, Dutch Double Standards, Punish Palestinians, Embrace Zionist Regime. Stay tuned for more. The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. The implications of the Dutch move will reverberate throughout Palestinian civil society, which is under unprecedented attack by the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime accuses the prominent human rights and social services organizations of serving as front groups for the Popular Front of the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party banned by the Zionist regime, the US, and EU. The targeted groups reject the Zionist regime's claims and have demanded that Tel Aviv provide the evidence that it claims justifies by the sweeping measure. Recently, the Zionist regime responded by saying that it would allow the groups to review only the unclassified material on which it is basing the designations. In its response, the Zionist regime's military attorney stated that the core of the declarations is based on classified, cross-checked, and reliable intelligence confirmation that cannot be disclosed, as it may harm security. The Zionist regime's response shows that the targeted groups are afforded no due process rights. Adala, a group providing legal representation to the banned organization, said recently. It also suggests that the Zionist regime authorities have no evidence linking them with illegal acts and that this move amounts to the political persecution of human rights defenders. The terror designations leave the organization's staff vulnerable to arrest and their offices and property subject to closure and confiscation. The blacklisted group UAWC stated that given this context, the Dutch government was not abandoning it, but Palestinian civil society at large. The Dutch Foreign Ministry announced the decision recently after suspending aid to the group 18 months ago and following a year-long probe into possible links between the UAWC and the FPLP. That review examining the group's activities since 2007, when the Netherlands began funding the UAWC, yielded no evidence of financial flows between it and the PFLP. Nor has any proof been found of organizational unity between the UAWC and the PFLP or PFLP providing direction to the UAWC, the Dutch Foreign Ministry states in an 8-page briefing to that country's parliament. While rejecting the Zionist regime's claim that the UAWC is an arm of the PFLP, the Dutch review found ties between individual staff and board members with the leftist group. The Dutch government is ending its funding on the basis of UAWC staff and board members' political affiliation in their personal capacities. The Netherlands is effectively punishing an entire organization and all its beneficiaries over alleged political sympathies of some of its staff and board members. The Foreign Ministry's briefing to the Dutch Parliament states that organizations will be asked how they deal with employees or board members who may be involved with groups that are on the EU and UN sanctions list. Palestinian resistance To the Zionist regime, occupation, apartheid, and settler colonization has long been branded as unacceptable and criminalized. The U.S. designated the PFLP and other factions as terrorist groups as punishment for the rejection of the Oslo Accords signed by the fake regime of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization in 1990s. UAWC said that the findings of the Dutch review reflect the group's status and existence as an independent organization which has no political or religious affiliation with any party or political organization. The group added that it cannot and would not interfere with the personal political beliefs and affiliations of its employees and board members. UAWC said it was shocked over the move based on alleged individual links resembling the toxic allegations of Israeli groups like NGO Monitor. Groups closely aligned with the Zionist regime, such as NGO Monitor, have for years published scurrilous accusations against Palestinian groups, attempting to link them to proscribed political parties. The smear campaigns have resulted in onerous conditions on funding to Palestinian groups, curtailing their ability to carry out their work. So far, no government has come out in support of the Zionist regime's banning of the six Palestinian organizations it declared terror groups in October. But the U.S. and the EU have yet to explicitly condemn the move and demand that the Zionist regime revoke the designations. And as the Dutch abandonment of the UAWC shows, the Israeli declaration may have the intended effect of isolating the groups and drawing up their international funding. Three of the targeted groups, including Al-Haq, Al-Damir, and Defense for Children International Palestine, have submitted evidence to the International Criminal Court's war crimes investigation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip by the Zionist regime. That international tribunal is based in The Hague, the seat of the Dutch government. The UAWC was established in 1986 to support Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, facing Israeli land and water theft. The Zionist regime's illegal settlement activity is likely to be a primary focus of the International Criminal Court's investigation should it move forward. The Dutch government has been a leading donor to the UAWC since 2013, according to the group. The campaign to cut off Dutch funding to the group began in May 2019 when UK lawyers for the Israeli regime sent a letter to the Netherlands representative office in Ramallah with information about UAWC's supposed links to the PFLP. In June 2020, UK lawyers for the Zionist regime repeated those claims in a letter to Sigrid Kaag, Dutch development minister at the time, citing NGO Monitor as its principal source of information. UAWC said it was particularly saddened that the process leading to its disavowal was initiated by Kaag soon after her visit to the West Bank in early 2020, where she witnessed the relevance of the work. Kaag's oversight of funding to UAWC was used as a political cudgel by right-wing politicians in the Netherlands during that country's elections last year, as reported by more than 972 magazine. The UAWC said recently that the Zionist regime will seize the Dutch decision to further escalate its all-out attack on Palestinian civil society. All of this is diverting international attention from the Zionist regime's theft and its brutal suppression of the Palestinian people living under military occupation. The Dutch Foreign Ministry's briefing to Parliament mentions that the UAWC ended the employment of two staff members who were arrested by the Zionist regime in 2019 over their alleged involvement in a roadside explosion near a West Bank settlement that killed an Israeli girl and injured her brother and father. One of the arrested men, Samir Arbit, was hospitalized with life-threatening injuries after being tortured during his interrogation by Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's domestic intelligence agency. The Zionist regime prison authorities continued to interrogate Arbit while he was in intensive care, and a prison guard reportedly fired tear gas into his hospital room. Palestinian human rights organizations said that both Arbit and the other former employee, Abd al-Razak Farage, suffered physical and psychological torture during interrogation. The Zionist regime's attorney general closed an investigation into Arbit's brutal interrogation early last year. Independent UN human rights expert condemned the Zionist regime's failure to prosecute, punish, and redress the torture and ill-treatment perpetrated against Arbit. The expert said, "We are alarmed that the use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques or exceptional measures during questioning reportedly led to a forced confession, which the universal prohibition of torture and ill-treatment aims to prevent." Concerning the broader attack on UAWC, which predates the arrest of two of its former employees, Palestinian groups stated in 2020 that UAWC is preventing the Palestinian presence on land that the Zionist regime wants to annex. That is why UAWC has been under attack for years. The Palestinian group said the Netherlands should investigate Dutch campaigns maintaining commercial relations with and profiting from illegal Israeli settlements. Instead, a Palestinian group supporting farmers and vulnerable communities across Palestine finds itself under review. In its letter to Parliament, the Dutch Foreign Ministry reiterated that the Netherlands funds Palestinian non-governmental organizations as part of the country's support for a two-state solution. The Zionist regime's current regime cabinet openly refuses to negotiate with Palestinians towards a two-state solution supported, at least in rhetoric, by the US, EU, and United Nations.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on February 17, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
The urgent needs of the present time are usually quickly recognized by the masses of the people. And with a quick mention, they recognize them and enter the field. This was the case in the sacred defense era. Whenever Imam made the slightest mention of something, a deluge of people would take to the fields of battle. The same was true of recent events, such as defending the holy shrines. Of course, the vigilance of the Iranian nation in this regard is truly astonishing. They really enter the field vigilantly when necessary, a clear example of which in the past decades, as I said, was their presence in the front lines and presence in the confrontation with anti-revolutionary forces. The case of Tabriz in 1359 is an example in this regard, and there are other cases in other parts of the country as well. The people have done other activities as well.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The ninth of day was one of these activities. The people entered the arena voluntarily because they felt a need and they satisfied it. The same is true of scientific activities needed by country during the outbreak of the coronavirus. The young scientists of the country immediately began to work. We were witness up close to the activities. As soon as the issue was raised that a vaccine should be produced for this, scientists in different places and organizations began to work. And the result of their work is a variety of vaccines in the country that people used, as a result of which the country became needless of begging others. And it was not clear how many vaccines they would have given to us if they would have given any. If we had not produced it in our own, they would not have given us any. Such is the people's feeling about the urgent needs of the country and their fulfillment of those needs. The most recent example of the fulfillment of these needs is the people's presence in the 22nd of Bahman rally a few days ago. Today's 22nd of Bahman was astonishing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me. Through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Already struggling with the cost of living crisis, ordinary Europeans are now feeling the pinch at the pump, with the conflict in Ukraine pushing up the already high food and fuel prices. As plans to phase out oil imports from Russia are drawn up, the ripple effects of the Ukraine crisis are being felt across the continent.
Here in London, people are feeling the economic cost of the ongoing military conflict in Ukraine at the gas pump. Prices have been rising steadily since the start of the year and have now hit a record high. And what that means is that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the cost of transporting goods and, by extension, on the already rising cost of living.
Russia is the world's second largest exporter of oil. The EU imports 27% of its oil from Russia, the UK 11%, and the US just 8%, which is why Europe will feel the effect of the bans far more acutely than the US. The EU also plans to slash its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. That's 26% of their supply.
It's hard, bloody hard, but it's possible if we're willing to go further and faster than we've done before.
But to make it possible, experts say, the Europeans will have to make difficult compromises.
For the new government and Germany actually now saying, actually, we're going to bring back nuclear. Well, that was one of the key things, that they were going to get rid of nuclear completely, very quickly indeed. Then also coal, getting rid of the coal-burning power stations, and particularly those from maybe the using Polish coal, brown coal, which is incredibly dirty.
But could all this have been prevented? While the US and Europe blame Russia's ongoing military offensive in Ukraine for the soaring energy costs, some experts say it's a crisis that could have been averted.
One of the great things about international affairs is to understand not just what you want to achieve, but what the other side wants to achieve. And where's the middle path? Russia generally would want to have a working relationship to protect its security, to make sure its confidence is there. And, you know, instead of necessarily having people who are American allies literally a few hundred miles away from your capital, that's something they're not used to. So really understand their nervousness, now try and work out how to deal with it. But we've left it too late.
The new plans will mean less oil revenues for Russia and a faster transition to cleaner energy. But what it also means is a higher risk of inflation and recession across the continent. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Yuan has launched its futures contracts for the first time in the history of its energy exchange market. The futures contracts were launched for the naphtha and methanol trades. According to experts, futures are some very important instruments for the market balance. If other energy carriers, and especially oil, gas, and petrochemical companies, join Yuan's energy exchange on futures platform, Yuan's crude oil and gas is capable enough to be turned into a benchmark for pricing in the region.
As Iran has the largest oil and gas reserves in the world, the pricing benchmark for our gas and oil should not be elsewhere. The fact is that we should have our own pricing reference for our natural gas in the region. We hope that with the launch of futures and cooperation of all companies in the field of oil and gas, such a thing will happen.
Futures are some very important instruments for the market balance, while they are also some strong hedging tools. They provide investment opportunities for those who are seeking the amount of profit more than they can earn in the normal market deals.
Futures contracts are financial contracts obligating the buyer to purchase an asset or the seller to sell an asset at a predetermined date and price in the future.
The launch of futures trade markets at Iran's energy exchange will contribute to transparency and the predictability of Iran's economy. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Islamic Jihad movement held a national conference for women in the Gaza Strip on the occasion of International Women's Day. The conference, titled Woman is the Icon of Resistance, highlighted the role of Palestinian women in fighting the Israeli occupation and their struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinian women in the Gaza Strip paid a heavy toll during Israel's war on coastal enclave last year. According to human rights groups, the Israeli regime killed 60 women and 22 children in 2021.
We are supporting our women. We called the international, we addressed the international human rights to support our women, asking the international committee to protect the women, to protect the children, to stop the occupational forces against the women in Palestine.
Addressing the conference through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Dr. Ziad Nakhala praised the role of Palestinian women and their struggle against the Israeli regime for more than seven decades.
Palestinian women will not allow anyone to stop her resistance, consider it to be a red line. Palestinian women share military and political struggle with men. Palestinian women has given a lot for her homeland and abroad.
Conference attendees discussed ways of developing new strategies for women to confront the Israeli regime and its illegal practices, especially against women.
Palestinian women today meeting in Gaza to discuss about the role for women, for Palestinian women, and to discuss issues about how to defend the Palestinian in Palestine.
The annual event also tackled ways of bringing international attention to the plight of Palestinian women.
Palestinian women say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations. In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war which is sure to hurt the Russian people doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Members of Iran's Assembly of Experts have held their second biannual meeting this year. That's the ninth official session of the current assembly, which was elected in 2016.
Members of the Assembly of Experts convene twice a year to review the latest domestic and global issues. This time, Ebrahim Raisi, who's one of the Assembly's members, has participated as Iran's president.
Raisi was invited to highlight his administration's achievements and review the challenges it faces. During the session, Chairman of the Assembly of Experts, Ahmad Jannati, urged President Raisi to take practical steps to address the economic problems of Iranians and improve their livelihood.
We need to improve the livelihood of the less privileged strata. The Honorable President must take steps to make this happen. I hope other members of this cabinet follow suit and help the needy have a better life. This is the least we should do as a duty.
The Assembly of Experts was established in 1983, almost 4 years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Its main task is to monitor the performance of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The experts should also elect a new leader in the event of the demise, resignation, or dismissal of the current leader.
The Assembly of Experts was the entity that elected Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as the new leader after Imam Khomeini passed away in 1988. Not only does it supervise the performance of the leader, but it plays a crucial role in protecting the political establishment.
The Assembly of Experts is currently a body of 88 Islamic jurists. The entity consists of a leadership council and six committees. Members are elected by direct public vote for an 8-year term. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as around 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for their military court hearings for the third month in a row. Administrative detainees are denied due process, and their detention orders can be renewed for indefinite periods of time.
For the third month, the Palestinian administrative detainees are boycotting the Israeli military courts in order to protest the administrative detention. And now the Palestinian detainees need all kinds of support by the Palestinian community and the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are also subject to torture and psychological pressure by the Israeli prison authorities, including daily raids and solitary confinement. Currently, some 5,000 Palestinians are languishing inside Israeli jails, including minors and women.
The Israeli administration, they conducted series of attacks and aggression against prisoners, especially women. This gathering asking international community to put pressure to Israeli government in order to facilitate their rights and stop the aggression against Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners regularly stage hunger strikes and protest against both the administrative detention policy and harsh detention conditions. Prisoners' advocacy groups have raised the alarm over the inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails.
Nowadays, the situation is going to explode inside Israeli prisons because of the Israeli measures that aimed to break the will of Palestinian detainees and to confiscate their rights.
Experts say Palestinian prisoners will continue to suffer inside Israeli jails as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights. Statistics by human rights groups show that the Israeli regime has arrested over 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Joint statement by the diplomatic missions of the Western countries in Islamabad has created an uproar in Pakistan. The statement posted on the social media platforms presses Pakistan to condemn Russia. The statement was signed by the envoys of European countries and endorsed by the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad.
The move by the Western diplomatic missions here has drawn strong reaction from the Pakistani government. The Foreign Office has summoned the envoys of the Western countries to tell them that issuing public statements against the host country is not in line with the diplomatic protocols.
On Sunday, Prime Minister Imran Khan doubled down on the European ambassadors and made it clear that Pakistan is not their slave.
I want to ask the European ambassadors, did you write such a letter to India? What do you think of us? are we your slaves, that whatever you say, we will do.
Pakistan has maintained a fine balance in the ongoing conflict.